Sleep has many functions, including facilitating learning. Now a study finds that when we acquire new information and how soon we sleep after that may affect our retention of the info. That's according to research in the journal Public Library of Science 1. Scientists had more than 200 subjects memorize related words like fire and smoke, or unrelated word pairs like insect and truth. The researchers tested these subjects' ability to remember the pairs after 30 minutes, 12 hours, or 24 hours. Sleep had little effect on the ability to recall related words, but subjects who slept between tests were significantly better at remembering the unrelated words than those who got no shut-eye. But here's the most interesting finding. In the 24-hour retest, where all subjects had a full night of sleep, those participants who went to bed shortly after learning the words did much better than those who went through an entire day before sleeping. And this leg up in memory was maintained on subsequent days. So if you need to remember something, try reviewing those notes just before bedtime, instead of watching another rerun of Seinfeld you've already memorized. Sleep has many functions, including facilitating learning. Now a study finds that when we acquire new information and how soon we sleep after that may affect our retention of the info. That's according to research in the journal Public Library of Science 1. Scientists had more than 200 subjects memorize related words like fire and smoke, or unrelated word pairs like insect and truth. The researchers tested these subjects' ability to remember the pairs after 30 minutes, 12 hours, or 24 hours. Sleep had little effect on the ability to recall related words, but subjects who slept between tests were significantly better at remembering the unrelated words than those who got no shut-eye. But here's the most interesting finding. In the 24-hour retest, where all subjects had a full night of sleep, those participants who went to bed shortly after learning the words did much better than those who went through an entire day before sleeping. And this leg up in memory was maintained on subsequent days. So if you need to remember something, try reviewing those notes just before bedtime, instead of watching another rerun of Seinfeld you've already memorized.
We start this month with the National Gallery's first major exhibition of photography. Called Seduced by Art, Photography Past and Present, the show explores the fascinating dialogue between photography and the tradition of fine art and old master painting, a relationship, it turns out, that's been key to photography from its advent in 1839. The display puts major 17th, 18th and 19th century oil paintings alongside works by some of photography's most revered early practitioners. But it also brings the story right up to date. To introduce the exhibition's themes, the show's curator, Hope Kingsley, spoke to Leah Caribbean and began by describing an extraordinary 1857 photograph called The Two Ways of Life. It's a crowded tableau of posed figures and includes a backdrop of pillars, looped curtains and a surprising amount of nudity.
So this photograph is by Oscar Gustav Rylander, who was a Swedish painter originally, who turned to photography and made quite a name for himself, very much based on this picture, which created a great splash at the Manchester Art Treasures exhibition in 1857.
And the image itself is fantastic. It's the two ways of life, and there's a sort of sage, elderly man in the centre with two young men on either side, one of which is hearkening to the bad side, which is on the left, yes, and the other to the righteous that's on the right. Could you just sort of take us through it?
The right-hand side of the picture describes a life of religion and piety, of charity, of industry, while the left-hand side typifies the pleasures of the world, which are represented by gambling, wine, licentiousness, and other vices.
Could you just explain how Rylander made this work? Because it is really extraordinary.
It is extraordinary. It's made from 30 separate negatives. He didn't have the technical capacity to make this as one great big tableau in one exposure. His lens at the time couldn't cover such a wide field of view, so instead he used 26 different figures in 30 different combinations and pieced this together by printing one negative after another onto the sheet of photographic paper.
And rather wonderful that you've got it paired in the exhibition with a painting, Couture's sketch for his immensely successful mid-19th century work, The Romans of the Decadence. And the comparison that you make between the two visually really works. I mean, they both have a great deal of draped nudity, if I could put it that way, lots of decadence going on. But what's really interesting is that, and this is something that you argue in the catalogue, that nudity in photography was somehow a lot less acceptable than nudity in painting.
Yes, the problem with photography is that it's very real. You have an actual naked person in front of the lens. Naked people in photographs at that time were largely seen in the context of erotic photographs and out-and-out pornography. And this was a big market for photography almost as soon as it was invented. So to put nudes into an artistic context as a photograph exhibited as a work of art is tremendously confusing for the audience. What are they meant to think about these pictures within this great big tableau? And who are these people? It's well known that the kind of people that posed for the pornography were often prostitutes.
And yet at the same time, having said all that, this gets bought by somebody really quite prominent.
As prominent as you can get at the time, because Queen Victoria sees this picture and buys it for Prince Albert. In fact, she bought more than one copy for him. He hung, we believe, one in his private dressing room at Balmoral, which was their private place. And in fact, Victoria and Albert were Rylander's best patrons for his artworks.
We start this month with the National Gallery's first major exhibition of photography. Called Seduced by Art, Photography Past and Present, the show explores the fascinating dialogue between photography and the tradition of fine art and old master painting, a relationship, it turns out, that's been key to photography from its advent in 1839. The display puts major 17th, 18th and 19th century oil paintings alongside works by some of photography's most revered early practitioners. But it also brings the story right up to date. To introduce the exhibition's themes, the show's curator, Hope Kingsley, spoke to Leah Caribbean and began by describing an extraordinary 1857 photograph called The Two Ways of Life. It's a crowded tableau of posed figures and includes a backdrop of pillars, looped curtains, and a surprising amount of nudity.
So this photograph is by Oscar Gustav Rylander, who was a Swedish painter originally, who turned to photography and made quite a name for himself, very much based on this picture, which created a great splash at the Manchester Art Treasures exhibition in 1857.
And the image itself is fantastic. It's the two ways of life, and there's a sort of sage, elderly man in the centre with two young men on either side, one of which is hearkening to the bad side, which is on the left, yes, and the other to the righteous that's on the right. Could you just sort of take us through it?
The right-hand side of the picture describes a life of religion and piety, of charity, of industry, while the left-hand side typifies the pleasures of the world, which are represented by gambling, wine, licentiousness, and other vices.
Could you just explain how Rylander made this work? Because it is really extraordinary.
It is extraordinary. It's made from 30 separate negatives. He didn't have the technical capacity to make this as one great big tableau in one exposure. His lens at the time couldn't cover such a wide field of view, so instead he used 26 different figures in 30 different combinations and pieced this together by printing one negative after another onto the sheet of photographic paper.
And rather wonderful that you've got it paired in the exhibition with a painting, Couture's sketch for his immensely successful mid-19th century work, The Romans of the Decadence. And the comparison that you make between the two visually really works. I mean, they both have a great deal of draped nudity, if I could put it that way, lots of decadence going on. But what's really interesting is that, and this is something that you argue in the catalogue, that nudity in photography was somehow a lot less acceptable than nudity in painting.
Yes, the problem with photography is that it's very real. You have an actual naked person in front of the lens. Naked people in photographs at that time were largely seen in the context of erotic photographs and out-and-out pornography. And this was a big market for photography almost as soon as it was invented. So to put nudes into an artistic context as a photograph exhibited as a work of art is tremendously confusing for the audience. What are they meant to think about these pictures within this great big tableau? And who are these people? It's well known that the kind of people that posed for the pornography were often prostitutes.
And yet at the same time, having said all that, this gets bought by somebody really quite prominent.
As prominent as you can get at the time, because Queen Victoria sees this picture and buys it for Prince Albert. In fact, she bought more than one copy for him. He hung, we believe, one in his private dressing room at Balmoral, which was their private place. And in fact, Victoria and Albert were Rylander's best patrons for his artworks.